Hello there, my friends. Welcome to Careers Without 4 Years. I'm Melanie Dunn. I'm a workforce development professional, and this podcast is for anyone who wants to find out where the opportunity is in today's job market for great careers that don't require 4-year degrees. The economy has changed. Today, most jobs don't require bachelor's degrees. We'll hear from professionals in technology, healthcare, the trades, and other industries who love what they do and make a good living at it. In addition, we'll learn how to shop for affordable training, how to pay for it with grants and loans without excessive costs or debt, or even find free training. And if you are a woman or person of color, please listen in for inspiring stories by people who are thriving in careers you may not have seen yourself in. Hello, friends. First of all, I apologize for my voice. I'm recovering from a bad cold, which I now see is the great enemy of all podcasters. My guest today is Menelik Preer. Menelik is a photographer and a person of color thriving in the highly competitive fashion industry. His clients include Zac Posen, Saks Fifth Avenue, Michael Kors, Ralph Lauren, and Uggs. He's a member of an elite group of photographers that is represented by talent agents. He's represented by Home Agency, so if you want to book Menelik, you'll have to contact them. With the Black Lives Matter movement and at the insistence of Black performers like Beyoncé, doors to opportunity are opening for people of color for careers in fashion. But like a lot of other careers for creative people, there are not a lot of openings in fashion photography. Demand for photographers overall slipped 5% in recent years, in part due to the rise of digital image libraries, the increase in amateur photographers, and the cost of equipment. However, there's constant demand for photographers to provide family and professional photos. The average wage for a photographer is $41,000 a year. Experts estimate that photographers will be needed as drone technology grows and the need for aerial photography expands. In today's episode, you will learn the pros and cons of a fashion photography career and how to get into it, why becoming successful required Menelik to devote 100% of himself and step back from his day job, and how Beyoncé and then the Black Lives Matter movement broke the glass ceiling for people of color in fashion and the value of diversity. Here's the interview. So, Menelik Preer, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show and talk about being a fashion photographer. So many people are curious about this career. So many people know the brands that you have worked for, like UGG and Ralph Lauren and Michael Kors and Zac Posen. But when we chatted on the phone last week, I asked you how you found your way into photography, and you quoted this passage from the famous graduation speech about sunscreen. Got me really curious, so I looked it up, and it's by Baz Luhrmann, a writer, director, and producer. So here's what he said. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. So can you tell us about your journey into this career?
So I started off wanting to be an actor. I went to a semester of school at American Musical and Dramatic Academy. I didn't love academic school, your regular academics. I was definitely much more of a art school kind of kid. And then after that, I kind of got disillusioned with drama. I wasn't into AMDA, and I wasn't into what was going on there. So I picked up, I got a job working in restaurants, and which was really fun. And I worked in that for a few years. And then, feeling this sense of like, I need to get some sort of degree of some sort. I went back to school for culinary. So I was already working in that field, and I, liked the idea of wanting to own restaurants. So I did like, you know, a year culinary school program. And then I did a year of like restaurant management and hospitality program. And, you know, and thought that that's kind of like what my career was going to be, you know, maybe I would own something. I never really wanted to be a chef. So the culinary was just more to like know everything about how the industry, how everything works. And then over time, I started working less in restaurants and started working more in nightclubs. They're exciting. They're, you know, I did a lot of bartending in there. I managed and bartended, and I would fluctuate between managing and bartending. In most venues, I would say the bartender makes more money than anybody else, just because the tips are higher, and I really like being front-facing. And so it's sort of like a, we call it velvet handcuffs. It's like hard to...
Golden handcuffs.
Yeah, golden handcuffs. Not velvet. Because they're, you know, you're making good money. It's cash. I mean, at that time, you made cash every night. Like now we're in more of a credit card or, you know, cashless world than we were at that time. But, you know, you can be very addicted to making, you know, $300 to $800 and putting it in your pocket and walking home with that, you know? It's very seductive. It's very seductive. But another thing about making money quickly like that is you also do spend it quickly, right? Like, I think that that's a very common issue, because you also make it every day that you go to work. So if you work 4 or 5 days a week, you know, you can easily live, you know, a couple nights to a couple of nights versus learning to plan for the long haul. And I think that is definitely a harder thing, moving from that to then like a freelancer life, which is like you kind of need to plan for 3 months as a freelancer versus not needing to plan for even a full week as a restaurant worker. Yeah. And I mean, I did really enjoy it, and I liked working in that industry. I also liked working in nightlife versus restaurants just because of the right of way. When you work in a restaurant, the right of way is like the customer has the right of way. But when you work in a nightclub, the people working there have the right of way, just because there's like, you know, like you have a job to do, and the customer isn't necessarily right at after 12 p.m. because they're often a little bit more intoxicated than being right. And working in nightlife is also just exciting because there's, you know, performers and things happening, and, you know, like Zoe Kravitz performed, and, you know, Little Kim performed at places, and, you know, you have stuff like that like going on. So you've got all of that. And then eventually at one point I started wondering like, oh, you know, maybe I need to go. You never really gave that acting thing a shot, and that's really what you wanted to do growing up. So you should maybe try to go back and go back to school for it of some sort. So I went to like a 2-year acting conservatory and did that for 2 years while I was working in nightlife. And there was this thing that the owner of the studio used to say, and she used to say like, you know, she encourage everyone to do something else. You know, like she's like, if there's anything else in the world that you can do, you should do it, because acting costs everything. And most of you won't be actors after you graduate. You know, those of you that do graduate won't be actors. And in 5 years, and, you know, it's a lot of rejection, and people think that the job of an actor is to act, and she said the job of an actor is to audition. So because
And it's a lot of no to get maybe a little bit of yes. And she would say, you know, if you don't think about this first thing in the morning and the last thing at night, like, you should do something else. And I used to think, like, oh, you know, like, I make good money in nightlife. Like, I have fun. Like, I don't know if I need this in the way that I think she's being dramatic. I mean, she's an acting teacher. She's there to be dramatic. So, you know, after I got done with school, I did one play, and then I was sort of like not, you know, not really that into doing this. And I should say, like, it wasn't like even an exciting play. It was like a little tiny box theater situation. And around that time, I met two roommates that both worked in photo. One was a photographer and a photo assistant, and the other guy was a location scout. And just working with those guys, you know, I was always just hearing about these things going on, and it seemed like fun. And I was like, oh, maybe I can, you know, do something with one of my roommates. And then eventually I was like, well, if I keep giving him all my ideas, maybe I should pick up a camera myself and sort of, you know, play with it a little bit and see what I can do. And also in nightlife, there's all these, I almost thought that it was, I remember there was a certain point when I was just starting out, you know, and I was taking pictures of whatever anybody would let me take pictures of to, you know, make money. And I remember thinking, like, I really hope you don't want to become a fashion photographer, because I thought it was like a little bit insane. There's just so many people, especially when you're working in clubs, that are like, oh, I'm a photographer. Oh, I'm a photographer. And I feel like most people are actually photographers. I thought that was like, I was like, I hope you don't want to do that. And then I turned around one day and realized that that's kind of like where I was headed. And then I had this experience of, like, you know, starting to create stuff and, you know, and in the morning, I woke up in the morning, it was the first thing I thought about. And then I went to bed at night and it was the first thing I thought about. So I kind of understood what that teacher was talking about, but for me, it wasn't acting. It was, you know, picking up a camera, to the point where I was like, oh, I get it. I also get this sense of, like, don't do this if this is the, if there is something else that you can do. And I feel like at this time in my life, it's, photo is like all that I think about. So then it's almost at this point where, like, what else would I do? This is what I love. Like, what else would I want to do?
You took classes. I just want to ask you, what kind of classes did you take to get good at what you do?
Okay. Yeah. So I think once I realized that this was really what I wanted to do, and I started taking some classes. And I mean, also when I realized that I wanted to take a picture, I was like, I don't really know how to use my camera. Right. So I took like a photo 101 class. I took some just continuing ed classes at like ICP, which is, you know, a photo school. And then I also took some at FIT and at School of Visual Arts. And they were just like, every time I was just sort of like, I don't know how to do this thing, I would just take like a, you know, a 4-month class that was sort of, or I don't even know, maybe there were 3 months, but, you know, one was like lighting 101. Like, how do I light something? I have no idea how to do that. You know, or how do I use Photoshop, Photoshop 101. So I just sort of did that just to sort of get some base level understanding. Mm-hmm. And then started to mix that with assisting and, you know, assisting other photographers, which is, you know, the one of the more traditional ways to become a fashion photographer.
I see. So did you earn a wage when you did that, or like an apprentice, or did you have to do that as a voluntary, you know, person?
So I did not earn a wage at first, mm-hmm. You know, because photo assistants, a photo assistant is actually it can be a highly skilled level person. Right. And there are definitely people that come into the industry maybe wanting to be photographers and end up being career assistants and, you know, sort of become like lighting directors. But you know, when you don't know anything, you generally have to be a free assistant until you have something to offer. You know,
I don't know
if I have much to offer other than like, I can carry that bag for you and lift this and, you know, do that in the beginning. So,
but you learned, right? It's like an unpaid internship almost. Like a lot of them used to be unpaid and more of them are becoming paid because people are, you know, people are saying, I'm showing up, I'm contributing something. And actually the law changed on that, but you wouldn't be alone in having that happen, just needing to make that kind of investment to learn, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was definitely like an unpaid internship.
And you did it. And I think, I think you told me at one point that you had to let go of basically your day job or your night job in order to really get good at what you were doing, correct? To put in the amount of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a friend who's a producer who has helped me along, you know, throughout my journey as a photographer. And he suggested, he was like, you know, at the time I wanted to, you know, really try to make this move. And he was like, well, you're going to have to give up your job. You're going to have to give up being comfortable. He was like, you can't have another career and be comfortable and then really invest the amount of time that it would take to be a photographer. He was like, you need to be hungry. You need to get that photo job in order to eat that week. And if you don't work that week, you're not in photography, you're not going to eat. And he was like, that is the kind of hunger it takes to really, you know, get the ball rolling. Cause it's a job where you're constantly having to hustle. And even if you have regular clients, it's often that regular clients will use you for 2 years and then it's time, you know, then they're going to want to change up their imagery. So they're going to move to someone else. So you constantly have to be adding and growing and developing and reaching out and, you know, sourcing new avenues of work.
No, this is a good point you make, because actually I read a study of Uber drivers who are entrepreneurs. A lot of them really don't move forward in their entrepreneurship, despite the fact they're making a wage, right? They're making a living wage for most of them. And it's not necessarily good to have that safe job is sort of what the conclusion was, that maybe it's better to, go a little, I don't know. As a workforce development professional, I really feel like no one should have to like be hungry except figuratively, you know, not literally. So, but I do think it's being real to say that at some point we have to commit 100% to get good at something and we have to believe in ourselves.
Yeah. And I mean, I should say that I didn't have to go literally hungry. I just had to go figuratively hungry. Like there was always.
Exactly.
You know.
And everybody should have that, whether it's support at home or, some kind of B job people need. But I guess the point of the research was that you still have to be very disciplined if you're going to make it, you know, because it can be. It can lull you into a false sense of, it can lull you, but not really feed your dreams, I guess, was sort of the point of that. So I thought, a lot of people are in that situation and making that jump can be scary because someone wrote, and it may even have been in this speech as well, it's a lot of places, but do something, take a risk every day, do something that makes you uncomfortable every day. And I find like that's really the way to grow, right? Not to be afraid of failing. Maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. You know, I've had to say that maybe the worst thing would be not to try.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's also another, I don't know where it comes from, but it's another one of those like sayings that always is in the back of my mind that like, I don't know the full thing, but there's something about like, you know, this person died with their potential intact.
Yeah, it's yeah. Everything's going to be at a certain point, if you can kind of accept things aren't always going to be, things are going to be perfect, and that's okay. There's a, yeah, there's a book that I have it here. Someone wrote recently, Seth Godin, that is about risk taking in American society. And he said that we're so afraid of taking risks. And he said, show me your failures. Show me the things you threw away. Show me those things, because those show you're creative and you're in a process. And we should be doing that. That's part of it. And he was all about trying to renew people's ability to just let go and learn, because mistakes are part of that, he said. And he said he took a whole year to write this book, which he's a marketing guy. He's a very well-known one, but it was a really interesting story he told about writing this book. And I think it's a good one for our culture.
I mean, I agree with that. There's, I find it really interesting to talk to people who have had failures, or who also are vulnerable enough to share their failures, because that does let you know how someone grows. Because I don't think there are, you know, many people out there that didn't fall on their face at least one time or the other and then have to get back up, right? Like, there's that, I guess Babe Ruth, who at the time had, you know, more home runs, but he also had a higher amount of like, I don't know baseball, but like he had a higher amount of like not hitting the ball as well. But he always, you know, tried out to do something, you know, regardless of, you know, not being afraid to fail. And I think that there's another one thing that I did at 25, I quit drinking. And when I did that there, that summer, I wanted to learn to skateboard, and I thought that I was already too old to learn to skateboard. But it was one of these things where I'm like, well, you know, I'm like recreating my life. I want to, you know, do something. And, you know, I had to fall on my face 3 times before I could actually ride a skateboard. Right. So I think that that is sort of, that metaphor has always sort of stayed with me in my mind, that like you kind of have to fail to do something well.
Yeah. It's like when you fall off the horse, you get right back on. Right. And I definitely know people who are like that. And it's resilient. And that's an ideal for me, is like bounce back, you know, try it, because there's a joy in trying things and taking risks. There's a joy in it. And for me, it's always like, I would much rather regret that I would regret more that I didn't try something. You know, I would regret it more than if I made something and didn't turn out well. Like if this podcast didn't turn out well. I mean, I'm going to learn, you know, like this is okay. I mean, give it your best shot, but it's kind of freeing to go, we can try, and we can find that thing that, you know, is the last thing we think about at night and the first thing in the morning. Yeah. And then I think we're in the right place. Right? And that's really beautiful. So I guess this is a good point to ask you. So what's the one thing you wish everyone understood about what you do?
Yeah, I mean, it is very expensive. In that way that it's constantly reinvesting, you know, to produce work. And as you work more, it's like investing more into making, you know, the projects come to life and to come to life at a higher level each time. And, I think that 20 years ago, when you were working on your portfolio and you were working for magazines, all of them had, you know, humongous budgets that were, because a photographer, especially a fashion photographer's portfolio is their magazine, their editorial work. And the, you know, at one time, I think that, you know, the budgets were sort of unlimited and people could just do whatever they wanted to that was in their head and somebody was paying for it. Today, you know, it really is like you have to invest in it because, you know, people don't read magazines as much as they used to. So the magazines have a much smaller budget, which, you know, depending upon the magazine, like that can cover some of the costs or it can cover just the food. Or sometimes they say, listen, we have no budget, but we'd love for you to work on this, you know? So, and that can, you know, and yeah. Although when they have no budget, you tend to have more freedom to create whatever you want to, but photo shoots are expensive and, you know,
right.
They can cost, I mean, if you name the number, they can cost that number. But you know, like I think at this point now, the projects that I work on are probably at minimum 5,000 and, you know, maybe to 20 or 30,000 for an editorial project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that's a combination of my money in the magazines, but like it is a large investment.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And, like, you know, you're working to almost put all your money back into it to then move you to the next level or create that thing that you feel like you have to make.
Right. That makes so much sense. Is there a crossover to... There's working for the designers, right, or the fashion house. I don't know. That's maybe an old word. Excuse me. But then, and then there's advertising, right? Like there's the whole consumer product sort of advertising. Do you do any of that, or do people like you cross over into that or back and forth?
Well, I think that's all
a different lane.
The same sort of thing, right? I think that, like, you know, when a designer is using photography, it's for the most part advertising. And there's definitely projects where you feel like you are very much working with a designer on a project that's their baby and they just need to see their clothing come to life visually. And then you're working with, you know, the advertising side of it. Cause there's also so many different types of photo jobs that can happen. Doing e-com, you could be doing, you know, a social shoot, right, which will end up on their, you know, Instagram or your Twitter or and then a digital shoot, which will just end up on the web, as well as catalogs or, and then campaign, right? And then I guess campaign you would think of as the big advertising push. So, so basically, depending on where you are with your career, you're probably working some combination of most of those things, you know?
Okay.
And... yeah. So you're kind of going back and forth with that and then doing your editorial with magazines at the same time, because your editorial is sort of goes hand in hand with what clients you're going to get. Like the better your editorial is, the more, you know, highbrow your clients might become. And it also depends on if you're, there's someone who can have a more commercial fashion photography world. If you're like working for target and gap, you know, and that's really what you're working on. And then, you know, then you could be also working for like Louis Vuitton and Yves Saint Laurent, you know, and like that's, you know, going to be sort of a different career, and your editorial is going to reflect that, you know, whether in which magazines you're shooting for is going to reflect which clients you get, and what your work looks like is going to reflect kind of what client is going to book you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I guess I had, you know, layman's language for that, but yeah, that's exactly what I was curious about. Wanted to just take a moment to talk about the last year or so. Seem to have been shattering a lot barriers to entry for people of color in a lot of industries. And I'm just wondering if you're seeing that in fashion, and if so, how much, and what do you think of that?
Well, I think that it's, I mean, there's definitely a, there's been a big push in fashion for, in that way, you know, there's, and it has started a little bit before the Black Lives Matter movement, mm-hmm. you know, like in fashion, it was, I guess maybe 4 years ago now, maybe 3 years ago, Beyonce mm-hmm. was asked to do the cover of Vogue, and she said, "Find me a black photographer." Right. And they were like, "Well, we don't have any." That's crazy. So she brought on the photographer Tyler Mitchell, who is probably the you know, one of the leading black photographers today now, you know, because of that. And then that was sort of like the beginning of fashion starting to notice that, like, okay, we're just booking all the same people, and are we looking for voices that are different, you know? You know, I don't know if it ever was clear that there, I mean, I guess that's what a glass ceiling is, when you can see it and it seems like you can get there, but you can't necessarily get there. And you know, it's also, I think every industry has their boys club and has their friends that they've been working with for 20 years or so on and so forth. So they just continue to work with each other, and they don't necessarily look for something new, or a new way of thinking. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement really made it clear to a lot of industries, like, what are we really doing about this? And is there like an actual conscious effort to look at who we're hiring? And, you know, also say, when people say like, well, there is none, I mean, that's never true, right? It just means that you haven't looked. Right. So,
shocking.
So then, you know, people started looking around, and there was like, oh, well, there's actually all these black photographers and stylists and makeup artists and, you know, set designers and producers that have actually been in the industry for years, but maybe I just didn't know about them because I'm working only with the same circle of people. So, you know, it's very much like, expand your circle, you know, get a new voice. And also, is that same voice that has been, you know, out there always, is that reflective of, you know, what is your consumer base today? And also who, and also what everyone's interested in, even if that's not necessarily your consumer, there is also, you know, a sense of like, maybe your consumer hasn't changed, but maybe they also want to see a different eye or a different voice. Or, you know, like, what music is your consumer listening to, and what are their interests, and maybe they align with the interests of a new voice.
Thanks. That's really interesting. And I can see that you're right. You know, well, there's, you know, again, like, there's research on diversity, you know, and diversity is tied to profit And the more diverse your team is, it's about a 20 to 30% increase in your profitability, which is huge. Yeah, it's been proven over and over again by think tanks like McKinsey. So what if I were somebody interested in entering the business and I'm, say, a person of color starting out and I have a camera and I've learned how to use it and I think I might want to do what you're doing, what advice would you give somebody?
Constantly produce your own work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think continue to reinvest the money that you make into your idea, even if it like means being broke at times. One of the things that I did, one of the things that I did to build some of my early, my first clients was to say like, hey, can I take pictures backstage at your fashion show? I'll do it for free. I just want to get, you know, in there. And that was one of the early things that I did. And then, you know, if you're in a market to assist, meaning like if you're in New York or LA or Chicago or Miami, because that's really where the fashion industry lives. I mean, it lives the most in New York, but in those other cities, assist. And I mean, the most traditional way to become a photographer would be to find a studio like, you know, Pier 59 or Milk or Root or Smashbox, one of the studios that people shoot photos at, and then get a job in their equipment room. And it's like, that is the, and you usually do that for a year or two. And then you, after a year or two, those studios will then help find you jobs assisting. And then you can assist, you'll start assisting photographers and being a second or third assistant. And as you gain more knowledge, mm-hmm. you'll become a first or second assistant. And at the same time, you're building industry contacts and you should be producing your own work. And one of the beauties of working at a studio is that when there isn't anyone there and there's like a random Sunday that no one's shooting there, they would let you use the equipment and use the space to create something of your own, you know, which is a real benefit to working in a studio.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great idea. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard today, please subscribe and share this episode with your friends. And for more information about today's episode and to see some of Menelik's photos, please visit us on Instagram or Facebook at Careers Without 4 Years. Take care.